the Wildlife Observer Network.
Hey everybody, welcome back to Onward for Wildlife, a political podcast on Wildlife Observer Network. I'm your host, Tyke James. Today we are going on Word with Joe Ulion, founding president of the Labor Network for Sustainability and Voices for a Sustainable Future. Joe is a current board member of the U.S. Climate Action Network. He also serves on the advisory board of the Future of Music Coalition. Joe is a musician and a member of the American Federation of Musicians. Joe is the former Treasury Secretary. Joe is the former Secretary Treasurer of the AFL-CIO's Industrial Union Department and former Director of the AFL-CIO Center for Strategic Campaigns. Joe spent over 30 years doing organizing, bargaining, and strategic campaign work in the labor movement. Joe also served as the secretary to the North American Coordinating Committee of the International Federation of Chemical, Energy, and Mine Workers Unions, ICEM. Joe also served on the United Nations Commission on Global Warming from its inception in 1988 through the Kyoto Accords in 1997 until 2003. Joe is a founding board member of the Coalition for Environmentally Responsible Economies and served on the board for 23 years. Joe is a member of the National Advisory Board of the Union of Concerned Scientists and served as a senior strategic advisor to the Blue-Green Alliance for 5 years. In the early 1970s, he worked in an aluminum mill in Mechanicsburg, Pennsylvania, as a member of the United Steelworkers of America, and then on heavy and highway construction projects in central Pennsylvania as a member of the Laborers International Union of North America. When we last spoke, we talked about the presence of labor dynamics in wildlife conservation with Larry Williams, founder and CEO of Union Base, and one of the lead organizer for the unionizing effort at Sierra Club under the Progressive Workers Union. And I wanted to follow up that episode with a discussion about that connection with some more historic context. And before we get into the episode, I just want to say a really special heartfelt thank you to everyone who has been supporting the Audubon for All union effort. The solidarity has been very moving, and you know, I know everything's on Twitter and virtual and all of this, but it really does mean a lot. And you know, especially speaking for myself, I'm really grateful that I'm feeling more welcome in the labor movement as an environmental advocate. I'm very happy to be joined by Joe Ulion, because I know you're here to tell the truth about the connection in the environmental and labor movements. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me. How you doing?
Oh, I'm holding on. I am holding on indeed. Yep. Can we get this conversation started with some context of that claim I just made, the connection between the environmental and labor movement? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's kind of timely because we just celebrated the 51st anniversary of Earth Day. And Earth Day, a lot of people don't know, would never have happened without really strong support from the United Auto Workers Union and the American Federation of, and the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. Two unions threw in big time on the first Earth Day. And it was coming out of that that we won both labor and environmental things with the strength of that coalition. For example, we won the Clean Air Act, the Clean Water Act, the OSHA, Occupational Safety and Health Act, EPA got put into place. So there's a lot of historical proof that when working together, these two great social movements can accomplish even greater things than they could on their own. So, you know, the connection between labor and the environmental movement, to me, is a natural, it's a no-brainer. I do understand there are job issues that, you know, put up some barriers, but we can get into that if you want to.
Oh, absolutely. This is the space to do exactly that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in sharing that context, is that part of how you found yourself finding the labor network for sustainability? Because that is a merging of exactly what, you know, seeing those accomplishments and organizing around people. Is that really how LNS came about?
Yeah, it is. I mean, and you know, the climate crisis was also, you know, at the core of how LNS came about, because I had, one, had been an elected officer at the AFL-CIO. I was secretary treasurer of the industrial division. And in that division, I represented the coal miners and steel workers and, you know, fossil fuel workers, atomic workers, and so on. But I also served on the UN's Commission on Global Warming from its inception in 1988 until about 2003. And so I became deeply enmeshed in the climate issue. And by 2005, I had come to the realization that in order to do the kind of aggressive work needed, I had to step outside the political and cultural confines of the Federation. Things that I honor, by the way, I'm not diminishing them. I worked in those confines my whole life. But in terms of the climate crisis, I knew something more was needed. So that's when I left the AFL-CIO and founded the Labor Network for Sustainability.
And on that website, you have a really great statement and a webpage on Earth Day to May Day. And I think that, one, I've never seen those 2 days in the same sentence before. Right. So I was pretty appreciative to see that connection. But can you illustrate a little more? What does that connection look like today? You know, labor groups and environmental groups. What does that connection look like today?
Well, I'll tell you, it's pretty robust today. It's one of the things that gives me hope that we will not only solve the climate crisis, but that we're going to find a way to tackle the myriad of sustainability crises that we face as a nation and as a people. Because today, labor and environmentalists are working together on a whole host of things. Now, you know, we may not have had those opportunities had Biden not won, but we have someone in the White House and we have people in both houses of Congress who want to get serious about income inequality and solving the climate crisis. And that is providing an opportunity for us to exercise our sort of coalitional strength, so to speak.
Right. And I think that coalitional strength also comes in the cross-pollination of support where it is needed. I mean, and I think that I was actually talking to a friend earlier today that was telling me some really wise words about a labor organizer who made clear that, you know, the interest of having a safe workspace in the interest of having protections in the workplace goes beyond the workplace. You know, you want to have a safe living condition. You want to have protective working condition or living conditions as well. Mm-hmm. And, you know, having that connection in front of us today, you know, one of the examples I want to look at is how income inequality may be perpetuated within the environmental movement due to a lot of things, but one thing to mention is the lack of union, the lack of collective bargaining.
Yeah, it's true. And what that means is not only less voice on the job, although that's really important, but it means lower wages and fewer benefits. So, you know, I'm really heartened by I don't know if I'd call it a wave, but I've seen just in the last couple of years, several of the green groups, the staff are organizing unions. And I've been a part of some of those as a, you know, a election observer, counting the cards and that kind of stuff. But yeah, I mean, when management and you know, this management in the environmental organizations, just like management in unions, and their right. workers find a way to sit down and talk and jointly solve problems, it strengthens everyone.
Thank you. And, you know, I recognize that blue wave in the green sector, or maybe mm-hmm. the green wave in the blue sector. Mm-hmm. I recognize that. And, you know, I want to say that I'm recognizing that as someone who is unionizing at the National Audubon Society. I am one of the members of the organizing committee for Audubon for All. I'm very excited mm-hmm. and happy about that. I think mm-hmm. Audubon's greatest days are still ahead. And mm-hmm. I think that is with a collective voice in talking about what the working conditions are. But what can we do to empower the call to organize for environmental groups everywhere? Because some folks might look at Audubon and say, oh, well, that's a big organization. That may not fit me. You know, mm-hmm. I'm in a much smaller case, or it may not fit me because I'm not in DC or New York. I'm not in headquarters. It may not fit me. You know, how does this fit mm-hmm. them?
Yeah, well, there of the few cases I have been directly involved in, a couple of them have been small nonprofits that are state-based or regional at best, with staffs of, 10 or 12. So, you know, when people ask me about, you know, I want to form a union, but there's only three of us at the workplace, I say, look, forming a union is you plus one other. That's all you need, you know, two people. So size of the bargaining unit should not be considered a deterrent. And what should be an inducement to do it is what that organizing among the staff can mean for broadening and deepening the coalition between labor and environmental organizations.
Absolutely. And, you know, one thing I want to point out that may be a deterrent, unfortunately, mm-hmm. for organizing is union busting. Oh, yeah. And, you know, it can take a lot of different forms mm-hmm. and it can look and appear and have some of the tonality of neutrality. Yeah. But that's merely an illusion. I want to, you know, point out that Morgan Lewis, mm-hmm. you know, earlier this week, we're in the first week of May, earlier this week, dropped a report about claims about the allegations, substantiating allegations of discrimination, and it came with recommendations. Mm-hmm. Now, Audubon for All made a response to those recommendations, and that can be looked at online. But Joe, I want to ask you, mm-hmm. you know, what do you think about that? Yeah. You know, what's your perspective? Seeing that Audubon is one of the big great greens out there, mm-hmm. and now they're working with Morgan Lewis. You know, they were working earlier with Littler Medelson. What is your take?
Well, I would say for starters that both those firms that you just mentioned are well-known, long-time union-busting firms. And they do, you know, they're capable of wrapping things in sleek phrases to try to mislead people. They didn't always do that, but they're certainly capable of doing it. And the reason I say that is we went through a whole period in the 80s where the union busting was violent. You know, they had their thugs, the company thugs, and these were brought in by union busters, strike breakers. And when I say the thugs, I'm talking about, you know, union busters in full riot gear at the work site to instill fear in people. So that was the 80s. And now they're doing it a little, you know, smoother. But what I would say is most important is no one issue that they may think they can address should deter people from organizing, because this is a long-term getting a voice on the job, improving your wages, hours, working conditions. That's for life. Mm-hmm. And I'll tell you what, if you're an environmental organization and considering this kind of a move, you will attract better staff, higher qualified staff. People will want to come work for you if your staff has a union.
Thank you. And, you know, I think it's worth asking, you know, minimizing a climate catastrophe requires unions, right?
Yes, absolutely.
Unions in environmental groups as well, environmental advocates with good contracts. Yeah. How do you think that not only helps the movement, how do you think that helps the economy?
Well, I'll tell you what, it's one of the main things that when I set up LNS, one of my main talking points was, we are not going to win on climate. And we have to agree that failure is not an option. Mm-hmm. We're not going to win unless we have labor on the side of the climate movement. So winning requires the labor environmental coalition. I do think it's that that fundamental. And I also think that labor on its own will not be able to win the things it needs without help from the environmental movement. So it's like both of these movements will be stronger when they join together.
Thank you for that. Now, I have a bonus question that I always ask folks when we get into the conversation about the connection between, you know, the green and the blue. What union would solar panel installation folks go to? Glass, electricians?
Mm-hmm.
I understand that's a philosophical question.
Yeah, it's a difficult question. I would think electricians, but you know, to be honest, today unions represent all kinds of workers that you wouldn't think they would represent just based on their name. The names of a lot of the unions are historical. You know, the Steelworkers Union came out of the steel industry.
Mm-hmm.
But with the decline of that industry, they've A, organized in other industries and merged other unions in. So, you know, it could be any union, but I think electricians, because the solar panels generate electricity. So that's sort of my natural go-to.
All right. I appreciate that.
But and, one thing, I do want to add one thing on the jobs question that you asked just a moment ago, because when we get serious about solving the climate crisis, which we're on the cusp of doing, whole new economies are growing. And I'm not just, I mean, solar and wind, of course, but we're right now in the midst of the greatest transition in our history. And it affects many, many industries. And that transition can result in the creation of good jobs if these movements are working together to help advance that concept, what we often refer to as just transition.
I like that you said that, because that is illustrating, to some degree, what a win looks like in an intersectional labor and an intersectional environmental movement.
Mm-hmm.
Because yeah, it is requiring us to measure our progress by equitable means. It requires us to measure progress in a sustainable way. You know, it is not sustainable for workers to be underpaid. It's not sustainable for workers to be unprotected in trying to advocate for better working conditions. And that's, I think, something I heavily relate to in the environmental movement, that, you know, folks love the mission. Folks love to serve the community. And those are genuinely
and deeply, you know, moving things.
Yeah.
But those should not be the justification for exploitation. That should not be the justification to accept lower compensation on any reason. You know, I think that the work that is being done in the environmental movement at environmental centers, within communities, in the offices, you know, back when we were all in offices, I think that's the work that has been undervalued for so long. And, you know, you see this top down structure of management that, you know, as you've pointed out, you saw happening in the labor movement. And that's why folks unionize.
Yeah.
It's happening now in the environmental movement. So I really hope and I want to see if you can share some words of motivation for that cross-pollination.
Yes.
And specifically, if you can, you know, give a word of advice for the folks that are in, like me, a long campaign with Audubon to figure out, you know, how to get recognized and then how to get to the table.
Yeah. Well, I'm so glad that you said what you did about sustainability, because, you know, we, one of my talking points has always been, you know, we've been going green forever and we're not winning. And we really have to look at the sustainability picture, which means environment, social, and economic progress. So it's how people are treated and paid. It's about race. It's about equity. It's about, and of course, the environment. And, you know, one thing that I believe is starting to shift in the labor movement is a recognition, which wasn't there 15 years ago, that as long as humanity has this approach to its view of the planet as one of domination, that this planet is here, it's ours, and we can dominate it and do what we want to it, including dominate each other, which is part of capitalism, that we have a shot at breaking through that. And recognizing that all living things are connected. And when you hurt one, you hurt the whole. And when we start to respect each other, the animals, the plants, the planet itself, I believe everything's going to get better for everybody. And so for the Audubon Society, I would say that one, you have an opportunity to join a broader movement to protect people and planet, and I hope you do it. And for Audubon Management, I would say there is nothing to fear from sitting down with your team members and talking through problems, negotiating contracts, giving them a voice on the job. You might learn something.
I like that, Joe. I really appreciate that. And I know I said a bonus question before, but a second bonus question, because I included it in your bio, you're a musician. What do you play? I have to know.
Yeah. Well, I've been in the AFM for 54 years. It's the first union I joined.
Oh, wow.
I was 14 years old. I play guitar and I sing. I'm in a band. We've been together almost 20 years now. But I also play solo.
We all have to do that from time to time.
And I've kind of lived my life at the confluence of art and activism,
right?
Because I believe that no matter how brilliant our attempts to inform, it's our ability to inspire that makes the difference and builds a movement. And that's where art comes in, music and other art forms too. It reaches people at their core. Not just intellectually, but at their core. And I think when you do that, then you've won people for the long term. So, you know, music, and you know, while I've done that, I've also played all the forms of music that I love. It doesn't have to be art and activism. In fact, if that's all I did, I'd never get gigs in this town. So I have a great band that plays all kinds of Americana music. And when we get in the venues, then we play whatever we want.
Right. Right. And, you know, I'm not going to lie. I asked you that question in part in hopes that you would say that you played the trumpet or the trombone. So I would make the joke that, oh, you started with the brass workers, then you went to the steel workers.
Yeah, no, but, are you a musician?
I dabble. You know, yeah. I play the piano a little bit. Keeps me out of trouble. You know, and I tried to teach myself a little bit of the guitar. You know, you listen to B.B. King enough, you're just like, if I try, maybe it'll happen. But that takes a lot more time than I have. But I do like how, and I don't know how to read music personally. I just I just like how I could get carried away with it, how I can just like help me, you know, express things, explore things, and then sharing it with people is also extra special. So, you know, and I really love your note about art and activism. That really touches my soul. Mm-hmm. So I'm really glad that we got to talk, Joe. This was a really great interview, and I think a really beautiful message, you know, from Earth Day to May Day to any time that you're doing art. You know, I hope folks are thinking about, you know, the importance of organized labor and how the cross-pollination of the labor movement and the environmental movement is going to have to be achieved with a theory of change about, you know, like you said, achieving that economic and the social, you know, and workplace protections.
Well, that's the path we're on. And I'll leave you with one of my favorite quotes from a musician that I think has importance to us in all of our work. And it was Carlos Santana who said, to a musician, tone is first and foremost. And what he meant that was, it's not how many notes you can play in a measure, it's what tone you evoke from the notes you play. And I think that's true with us. You know, it's not what you say, it's how people feel when you relate to one another, and what that brings out in people. The tone is what they'll remember over the exact words.
And that's why I'm okay with stammering over my words in this podcast.
Me too.
All right, Joe, that's all the time that we have. Thank you again.
This episode is sponsored by our patrons on Patreon and our monthly supporters on Anchor. Wildlife Observer Network is a wildlife media project I started with some friends from Philly. On the network, we create podcasts, videos, blogs, and more. Go to wildlifeobservernetwork.com to check out more of our content. We look forward to enhancing what we currently do and expanding to other forms of wildlife content from our network of contributors. You can push this progress further by becoming a Patreon supporter today, with membership starting at only $1. Any contribution means a lot, so leave a comment, and don't forget to rate us so we're easier to find. I'm Tyke James, and thank you for listening to One Word for Wildlife. Be well.